Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Good evening and welcome to the History of Alchemy podcast. I'm Travis Dow.
And I'm Pete Coleman from the Bohemican podcast.
So today we're going to talk about someone that was known to another alchemist we talked about. Alexander von Suchten was actually, we mentioned his publisher before. We did a show on Benedictus Figulus. Remember that?
Yes, I do.
Yeah, so Alexander von Suchten was a pretty interesting guy. He was an alchemist, obviously, but also a physician, poet. He was born in 1520 in either Dirschau, or Chev, as it's now known, or Danzig, or Gdansk, as it's now known. Not quite sure, but he died in 1575 in Linz. Part of the motivation for this guy is that there's not a whole lot on him in English on the internet. So he come up here and there in a book or two, but if you're trying to find stuff about his life, it's kind of hard online. So we're going to fix that today. There's stuff I found in German, and so we translated it. There's also stuff in Polish, because those towns I mentioned are no longer in Germany, except for Linz, which is Austria. But Chev and Gdansk are now Polish, so his name in Polish is often kind of translated to or changed to Suchta with a Z. And he's also pretty interesting because of kind of who he knew and who his circle of patrons was. And we'll talk about that. It's kind of an interesting guy. That it's kind of weird that there's not that much about him in English. But the family von Suchten is actually, you know, there's a nobility in there. If it has the von, it originates from the Lower Rhine, and somewhere around 1400, the family kind of transferred to Gdansk, and over the centuries became more and more influential. So, like, some were counselors, mayors. His parents, George von Suchten and Euphemia Schultz, also a paternal uncle, Christoph von Suchten, was secretary of the Polish king Sigismund I, for instance, right? And a maternal uncle, Alexander Schulze, or Latinized as Sultetos, which is weird, was one of the very few friends of Nicholas Copernicus.
Oh, it's interesting.
Nicholas was kind of . So, you know, it's that Polish circle, like the upper crust of Polish nobility and you know, Nicholas Copernicus and that kind of thing. So another was a Domherr, which is kind of like a cathedral warden, I guess, to Frauenburg, which is now Fromburg in Poland.
So Alexander attended high school by 1535 in Elbing. In December of 1538, his uncle, Alexander Schultz, passed on a canonry in Frauenburg, which actually is a cathedral wardenship.
Yeah.
All right, so for those of us that don't know that. Since this position was later barred for non-academics, he enrolled in January of 1541 in Leuven and studied philosophy and medicine there.
Yeah, just because he had to be an academic is kind of interesting. But it's good that he did so, because around 1545, he kind of gained a reputation enough that he stayed at the court of Albrecht of Prussia in Königsberg, where his poetry, Vandalus, which is basically like a Polish kind of tribal legend of the Queen Wanda.
Which we mentioned before on this show.
Yeah.
We have. Yeah, the Queen Wanda was a witch of...
We mentioned the character.
The character, okay, exactly. Yeah.
And between 1549 and 1552, he was an alchemist for Otto Heinrich of the Palatinate. So this is a little bit before the kind of golden age of alchemy, but still, like, it's definitely in the peak there. So an interesting time for an alchemist.
So at this time, you have to imagine the capital of Poland was Krakow, wasn't mm-hmm. it, Travis? So it was one of these capitals that really drew a lot of people in, and it was a seat of Poland power. So especially in that golden era that you're talking about between 1554 and 1557. You know, he probably did attend another university, an Italian university in Ferrara, and acquired a doctorate in medicine. In 1563, he tried unsuccessfully for the position of personal physician in Kronenzburg. After 1567, he worked with the Strasbourg doctor Michael Toxidis, together in Alsace and the Upper Rhine. In the fall of 1574, Alexander took over from von Zuchten, ultimately in the place as a doctor, or what we consider as a court physician, in Linz in Upper Austria, where he also died by November 7th, 1575.
Yeah, so what's kind of interesting about him is he was an alchemist. He was probably even more known as a physician, and he was a very strong supporter of Paracelsus, who we've done a show on. The interesting thing is that he was a supporter of Paracelsus, the physician, not necessarily the later Paracelsian alchemist, because he considered gold making and transmutation of metals just complete quackery, like just charlatanism and not possible. So he focused instead on what we would today actually call actual chemistry and medicine. But he does talk about alchemy here and there, because that also is one of his jobs. So instead of trying to pick apart what this might mean and reinterpret who he might have been, I did find some quotes by him, and we'll read through some of these quotes in a minute. Some of his known works are De Secretis Antimoni Liber, or The Book of the Secret of Antimony, which was published in Strasbourg, and then Antimoni Mysteria Gemina in Leipzig, like other chemical writings in Hamburg in 1680, so published far after his death. And that also includes some texts that, again, as we've seen often before, it's not really sure if they're actually from him or not, or if the whole thing is just from somebody else and actually written by a pseudo von Zuchten. So who knows? But some of the more interesting quotes I found were... some are just like interesting kind of, you know, because he was a poet and he was kind of a philosopher. So one that I liked was that he said, "I am a friend of Socrates and Plato, but still more of truth." Another one is, "Not everyone may understand the truth, yet it must be taught, should but one in a thousand receive it." So, you know, throw the truth out there and someone will get it. Another one is, "Time brings roses."
I think that's like a bumper sticker.
Yeah, I was like, yeah. What does that mean?
Time bring roses. All right.
Another one is from another quote I found, it which, again, almost makes me wonder if it's from the same person. It's kind of a longer one. I'll try to summarize it. I'll paraphrase it. But it's, again, this hermetic tradition, which is why I kept it in here. So in this hermetic tradition where you have this secret knowledge from Adam and then passed on through Moses, so he talks about that. So, you know, he says, Adam, who had knowledge of all arts, also received that of medicine from God, right? So even the kind of hidden knowledge of medicine he includes in this hermetic tradition. So, and then he also subscribes to the idea that it was kind of kept secret by the learned, which we've seen over and over again. So he mentions the flood, and then also that during the flood, along with a lot of other knowledge, the art of medicine was also lost. No one knew the art of medicine, basically, except for Noah. And to Alexander, Noah was Hermes under a different name. So we call him Noah. Other people call him Hermes.
All right, so he's putting a biblical spin on this.
Well, Old Testament many people do put a biblical spin on it, but some people said that Hermes was Moses. So this is kind of a new little spin. So I'm like, okay, I'll keep that one in. That's kind of interesting. And then, you know, he says, so everything you ascribe to Hermes, you're actually ascribing to Noah. So it's okay. Don't worry about it. It's cool.
The tent's big enough for all of us, basically.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So then he said that Noah, before his death, described medicine, but skillfully concealing the true nature of medicine, among other matter. So after Noah's time, there was a great time of, you know, diseases and people seeking refuge, and some in herbs, others in animal products, some in stones, metals, and this one thing after another was tried without full knowledge of the same. So basically a time of experimentation, right? But some had the appearance of virtue, but there was as yet no doctor, he says. So the sick were carried to some public place. those who had had similar complaints, showing them the remedies used by themselves, right? So kind of trial and error. Like one guy was sick and he said, hey, well, I ate this leaf and it made me better, so you should try the same thing. So such was medicine until the time of Apollo, i.e., he says 1915 BC. That's awfully specific. But this Apollo was a clever and learned man, and carefully noting those things which proved efficacious in diseases, he began to visit the sick and thus became a public physician, to whom after his death a temple was erected and divine honors were paid. So he's saying Apollo is basically just a doctor, right? In such honor was medicine then held, which today begs its bread. Then he goes on in some of the Greek tradition, naming a few names and passing down this this knowledge until 457 years, again, it's very specific, came Hippocrates, who I think we've all heard of here or there. And Hippocrates also continued the experiments and dabbled in medicine, which so Alexander credits Hippocrates with inventing methodological approach to medicine. So then from this empirical medicine, it gives the Greek a bunch of credit. And then 500 years after Hippocrates, which is finally a round number, it comes Galen, a plausible man who describes the Hippocratic medicine, painting it in beautiful colors, inventing causes and symptoms of diseases, ascribing virtues to herbs, and teaching the cure of feverish illnesses by cold, that of cold, ones by heat. Okay, and then he talks about like deduction of reasoning, but he still says at the root of it, it still wasn't a science, but more of opinions, accepted as truth itself. Okay, so there's a little bit of criticism to Galen, but here we go. I'll quote this part. But God, who is not always wrath with man, has in our time chosen Philip Theophrastus Bombast of Hohenheim. You know who that is?
No, who is that?
Paracelsus. Remember, that's only part of his name. Remember Paracelsus had a name that was like, and it actually is like Bombastus of Hohenheim. Yeah. To rekindle the light of medical science and to expose the deceit practiced in his day. Therefore, this Theophrastus is the true monarch of medicine and will remain so until the end of time. Dun, dun, dun. Yeah, he really held Paracelsus in high regard. Then another quote, last one, he said, "The present time is not ripe for the knowledge of these mysteries, for it has never tasted rest. When the time comes, before the day of judgment, in which the secret of all hearts are laid bare, at that time, says Paracelsus, I order my writings to be judged." Bam. So basically, to Alexander von Suchten, Paracelsus is the final word.
Well, you know,
Travis, Galen has his fault, Hippocrates, you know, but...
It's very interesting, Travis, because von Suchten went very, very much into detail to try to walk the researcher from one point of Hellenistic background, matching it with biblical Old Testament religious background to get to Paracelsus, you know, and there, you know, therefore I find it very interesting that, you know,
it's a neat history of medicine
it is because
one page of text.
You know,
yeah.
What's great about the show that you have here with alchemy is that the table is never full. There's enough room for everybody here, including von Suchten, that really kind of turned it back on what we consider to be, you know, alchemical thought. You know, he was more, like you said, more a man of letters. He was a man of medicine and of chemistry.
Yeah. So basically, my conclusion is, because it's hard to say, like, okay, so he was an alchemist, but I couldn't find a whole lot on whether he was actually hired to specifically make gold, which is generally what you think of as alchemy. But if you're also known as if your bigger reputation is a court physician, then you might be, you know, creating cures for the plague or more after the elixir of life. Who knows? But clearly a Paracelsian kind of spin on medicine. So it does kind of make sense. He is said to have just called gold making and transmutation of metals quackery. So this is still possible to say those things and be an alchemist. But that's why, in some ways, I'd consider him more of a chemist and a kind of a like experimental pharmacist, let's say, because that's what, you know, that's what definitely what Paracelsus was. So that's my spin on it. Someone might come back and you know, if they find more stuff in English, correct me. But yeah, I just, when I was doing the research for this publisher, Benedictus Figulus, that I thought it was interesting that, okay, let's take a look at this Alexander von Suchten guy who's has well-connected nobility. Yeah, let's take a look, closer look at him. And so now we have. So there you go. By the way, if you want to have a deeper look at Galen, I think I just passed him in the History of Philosophy podcast. So if you want to hear more about Galen and how he disagreed with Aristotle or agreed with Aristotle, that's pretty good stuff. And Hippocrates, obviously. And yeah, all those guys. But yeah, anyways, that's about all we have on Alexander von Suchten. So thank you very much for listening.
Thanks. Have a good evening.
You've been listening to the History of Alchemy podcast with Travis Dow and Pete Coleman. For more information about this episode, and other information about alchemy, alchemists, and related subjects, visit historyofalchemy.com. Find us on iTunes, subscribe, review, and don't forget to rate us. We'd love to hear from you. Send your comments, ideas, and corrections to podcast@historyofalchemy.com or get in touch via Facebook on the History of Alchemy podcast page or Twitter @AlchemyPodcast. Tune in to our sister podcast all about the Czech Republic, Bohemicon, which is also available on iTunes or on Bohemicon.com. Until next time on the History of Alchemy podcast, thank you for listening.
Traffic jams, tailgating, pile-ups. Ugh, the joys of driving. How could it get worse? The federal government wants to have a say in what you drive. That's right. The Biden administration's EPA is pushing mandates that would ban 2 out of every 3 vehicles on the road today. Don't let Washington become your backseat driver. Protect the freedom of driving your way. Visit EnergyCitizens.org. Paid for by the American Petroleum Institute.